It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
There really is no protection for the consumer, the customer, or the coworker. The law creates an opportunity for people with disabilities to work, and the incidental effects as it relates to the coworkers and customers are not protected under the law. The Balancing Act will favor the person with the disability in that situation.
Stephen Traubert, staff attorney at the Disability Law Center, describes the laws that protect people with disabilities against discrimination in employment and explains the Americans with Disabilities Act, which revolutionized employment law for people with disabilities. And during this week's News You Can Use, we'll tell you about a new resource available online for self-represented litigants. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 292, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and online at www.wrir.org and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. On September 13, 2013, the Supreme Court of Virginia established the Virginia Access to Justice Commission. The mission of the commission, which is comprised of judges, lawyers, and others, is to promote equal access to justice in Virginia, with particular emphasis on the civil legal needs of Virginia residents. The formation of the Virginia Access to Justice Commission is consistent with Vision 3 of the current strategic plan for Virginia's judicial system, adopted in 2009, which states that Virginia's courts will maintain human dignity and provide effective access to justice for all persons. In establishing the commission, Virginia joined 28 other states with access to justice commissions charged with expanding access to civil justice for low-income and disadvantaged persons. The goals of the commission include coordinating access to justice activities among various groups, mobilizing legal professionals to provide legal services to low-income individuals, encouraging the development of auxiliary resources for underserved populations, and making the courts more accessible for all citizens. Now, almost 3 years later, the Supreme Court of Virginia announced earlier this month that a new website is available to aid self-represented litigants in the Commonwealth. The Virginia Judicial System Court Self-Help website, selfhelp.vacourts.gov, provides neutral legal information as a public service in topical areas commonly sought by self-represented litigants. The Virginia Judicial System Court Self-Help website features glossaries of legal terms used in the district and circuit courts and instructions for routine processes, with the goal of making the courts more accessible for all citizens. A project of the Virginia Access to Justice Commission, the Virginia Judicial System Court Self-Help website addresses various case types and organizes information from the Virginia Judicial System website and other sources into user-friendly content areas. The site explains how to find a lawyer, a mediator, a court, a case, or a court form. The site also explains filing fees and waivers. Lastly, the site has legal information on child custody, support and visitation, divorce, guardianship, landlord-tenant, probate, protective orders, small claims court, and traffic cases. Selfhelp.vacourts.gov features responsive design that works on computers, smartphones, and tablets. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Disability Law Center of Virginia. We're speaking with Stephen Traubert. He is a senior staff attorney, and we will be talking about employment discrimination against persons with disabilities. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hi, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
To start, would you tell our listening audience exactly what is the Disability Law Center of Virginia?
Sure. The Disability Law Center is Virginia's Office of Protection and Advocacy. We are mandated by federal law to ensure that Virginians with disabilities are not subjected to abuse, neglect, or discrimination.
So for purposes of employment, which is what we're talking about today, what is considered a disability?
A person with a disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act is a person who has a physical or mental condition that substantially limits a major life activity. That's sort of the lawyer version of the definition. A way to think of it would be, do you have a physical or mental condition that causes you to be unable or restricted in something that most of us would take for granted and engage in on a regular basis? Regularly conducted activities such as walking, speaking, seeing, hearing, or learning. It doesn't necessarily have to be related to the job. It has to be a major life activity that an average person would engage in on a regular basis.
So since we're talking about employment discrimination, what employers are covered under laws that prohibit discrimination against persons with disabilities?
Typically, private employers, and by that I mean non-governmental employers, have to have at least 15 employees before the legal protections of the federal laws come into play. There are some state laws that cover smaller employers, but a good rule of thumb for private employers, such as a grocery store, a movie theater, a restaurant, those types of businesses, which we consider to be places of public accommodation, have to have at least 15 employees. A state or local government is covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act, regardless of the number of employees at that particular location. And that is logical if you think about it, because the government overall certainly has more than 15 employees. There are also protections for federal employees. It comes from a different law, but they're essentially the same protections.
So I know that the laws use the term qualified individual with a disability. What exactly does that phrase mean?
In order for the protections of the Americans with Disabilities Act to apply, the person has to be qualified to perform the essential functions of a job. There was a period of time prior to an amendment to the Americans with Disabilities Act, which happened in 2008, went into effect in 2009, where a lot of people who common sense would say had a disability, the law actually said they were not a person with a disability because of medication that they used or what's called an ameliorative device, like technology that might make them able to perform those functions of everyday life without a limitation. So once the act was amended, it made it easier for a person to qualify as a person with a disability. In terms of the job itself, the person has to be able to perform what we call the essential functions of the job. And I can go into that a little bit if you'd like as well.
Sure. Well, tell us, what are the essential functions of the job? Because that seems to be a pretty important threshold that has to be met, first of all.
It can be a very tricky and difficult question. In certain types of occupations, some of the distinctions between an essential and non-essential job function can be difficult. For example, as an attorney, if I wanted to apply for a job and the employer told me that I had to be able to drive in order to travel to court, I would come back and say, is there anything about an attorney that makes you question them about their driving abilities before you hire them? And the answer to that is no. You don't hire an attorney for their driving abilities. You hire an attorney because of their ability to think, process, write, communicate with the court. Driving is not an essential function for an attorney, even if that person is required to travel for work, because there are other means of traveling. I could ride a bus, I could take a cab, or I could ask for an accommodation to be provided for me in terms of transportation. If I were applying for a job as a bus driver, it would be reasonable for my employer to ask me if I could drive, because that's a fairly essential function for a bus driver.
So that's a very good example, and we'll talk about reasonable accommodation shortly. But before we talk about that, can you tell us what practices, what activities are covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act that employers have to comply with?
That's another very good question, in that a lot of people aren't familiar with how far the acts that a business engages in extend. For example, it's usually fairly straightforward to clarify to an employer that they have to have an accessible entrance to their building, an accessible restroom, accessible facilities on site. But then that same organization may provide a training off-site, or they may send their staff out to participate in community activities, and then those activities are not at accessible locations. So those sorts of what we might call extracurricular or remote activities, accommodations have to be provided as well, both to get the person to the location and then to ensure that that location is accessible upon arrival.
Now, does the Americans with Disabilities Act impose any limitations on an employer asking for medical examinations or even asking about disability?
There are limitations. It's a balancing act. I think it's fair to say that an employee who requests an accommodation will have to provide medical documentation sufficient to justify the accommodation they request. In other words, a very straightforward letter from a physician explaining that a person needs a modified work schedule, or they have to be accommodated in, let's say, excessive absentees under an ordinary policy, it would be fair for the employer to say, what is it about your medical or mental condition that requires you to miss these days or to have this accommodation? In other words, it may not be enough to say, my patient requires these accommodations. It would be fair for the employer to say, how is this accommodation going to ameliorate the medical condition that causes the disability? So under ordinary circumstances, it's a need-to-know situation. The information cannot be shared with anyone outside of the immediate supervisor, the director who makes the accommodation decisions. But there is, I think, a threshold of establishing why the particular accommodation is necessary must be documented by medical records. And it is fair for the employer to request sufficient medical documentation to establish the need for the requested accommodation.
So since we're talking about reasonable accommodations, is there any affirmative obligation on an employer to let people, if their employees know that reasonable accommodations are available if such are needed?
In a general sense, it's inappropriate for an employer to approach a person who they perceive to have a disability and ask if that particular person needs an accommodation. I think your question is, in general, does an employer have to know that these accommodations are available? And I'm not sure the law specifically mandates that an employer make an employee aware of specific accommodations that might be available. The burden typically falls on the employee to request the accommodations necessary to allow them to perform an essential job function.
So that gets back to the employee. How is an employee, a person with a disability, even to know that if they need a reasonable accommodation to do the job, that they have a right to ask for it and that the employer has a duty to provide it?
It is an affirmative obligation. I think it can be difficult for employers to broach the subject without coming across as if they are assuming that a performance issue is related to a disability, or that a person even has a disability if they have not disclosed it. So the burden does exist for the person with a disability to disclose their disability and state that they need an accommodation in order to perform the function. If they don't know what accommodation they need, then that's where conversations need to take place between the employer and the employee. But it's actually inappropriate for an employer to assume that someone needs a specific accommodation or to even offer it, because then they're assuming about the disability.
So can you give us some examples of some of the accommodations that an employee, that a person with a disability might need in order to perform the essential functions of the job?
Sure. In the technology age, a lot of issues that were more challenging to resolve maybe 10 or 15 years ago have become much easier to resolve due to the availability of speech-to-text software that would allow someone who might have difficulty typing manually to use speech software. A reasonable accommodation would be for the employer to provide that software so a person could basically do their own dictation and not have to bring in a third party to transcribe and type something up. So that's a very cost-effective way to accommodate somebody in that situation. Another example would be, a technology example would be a Braille printer, a screen magnifier, things that would help someone with a visual impairment be able to see their work better. In other contexts, we would see someone requesting a modified work schedule if they needed to get frequent insulin injections or some kind of ongoing medical treatment that required them to be out of the office. A modified work schedule would be, in most cases, a reasonable accommodation. Even teleworking has become a much more common accommodation under certain circumstances for people who might have issues with transportation or other concerns that would put them in a situation where working from home would be a better situation for them.
Now, are there limitations on the employer's obligation to make a reasonable accommodation? I mean, things that are simply too much to ask for?
Yes, there are limitations, and I think the word you used is the perfect word, and that is reasonable. The law does not require an employer to undertake what's considered to be an undue hardship. That hardship can be financial. It can be that the job is being modified too much to allow the person to actually perform what are considered to be essential functions. It's okay, for example, to say to a staff attorney, you don't have to drive. That would not be reasonable for somebody who was actually driving other people or responsible for transporting other people. Another example would be you wouldn't necessarily be able to telework if your job was to be in the office as a receptionist or if you were on phone duty or something that required you to be physically in the office. That sort of modification would create a hardship and change the basic nature of the business so dramatically that they would not be able to do that. It would not be reasonable to expect the business to do that. Financially, it depends on the resources of the employer. There is typically not a ceiling for the government. I think Microsoft would have a difficult time claiming an undue hardship, whereas a smaller business that doesn't have incredible profits would be able to reasonably say, we cannot spend $15,000, $30,000 to modify this workstation to allow this person to work here. Other situations, that would not be an undue hardship.
So is it fair to say that the larger a private employer, the higher the undue burden has to be in order for an accommodation to be considered unreasonable?
It's a very good rule of thumb. It can have to do with profits and revenue, but it's not a today-only kind of question. For example, if you're in a business that has years and years of high profits and you're having a difficult year, it would be, I think, difficult for an employer to say, well, we didn't make any money in 2015, so we're not going to provide these accommodations. If the business had a long history of generating revenue, that bar would be set a little higher before they could come in and say, well, this is an undue hardship for us because we had a bad year. This is sort of a prorated long-term investment in the employer's business to accommodate an employee.
Are alcoholics covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act?
Alcoholism is considered a disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and a person who has that disability is protected. However, behavior that is inconsistent with the rules of the workplace is not protected. So if someone who is considers himself an alcoholic or is documented as an alcoholic and they need an accommodation to go to meetings, to go to therapy, to see a doctor, that would have to be accommodated and that person's schedule would be modified if that person showed up intoxicated and was unable to perform their job functions or missed work excessively because of issues related to alcohol. They would not be protected because they would not be performing the essential functions of the job.
Okay, so what if an employer's customers, or for that matter, other employees, feel uncomfortable around the person with a disability, the employee who's with a disability? What happens in that situation?
There really is no protection for the consumer, the customer, or the coworker. The law creates an opportunity for people with disabilities to work, and the incidental effects as it relates to the coworkers and customers are not protected under the law. The Balancing Act will favor the person with the disability in that situation.
Well, what if an employer believes that the employee cannot perform the job safely and the employer thinks that the person with a disability threatens the safety of employees or other persons?
That is a valid concern. I used an example of driving earlier. I'm going to use a slightly modified example now. It would be illegal for an employer to ask every employee, state every medication you take, just because we want to know. But it would not be illegal for an employer to say, you're going to be driving a forklift around a lot of other people. You're going to be lifting a crane. You're going to be operating machinery that could seriously injure or kill someone if operated improperly. So we want to have a list of all the medications you take that might affect your ability to operate heavy machinery, that might make you sleepy, that sort of thing. So safety concerns can not only lead to a question about how will you perform the essential functions of the job safely if an employer notices an obvious disability, but they can also lead to some questions that ordinarily would not be legal if there's a legitimate safety concern behind those questions.
So it sounds like it's a need-to-know basis, very carefully tailored to the specific job tasks that are going to be performed and the specific individual who would be asked to perform them?
That's a great way to put it. For example, you wouldn't be able to ask the same questions of a receptionist that you would be able to ask of a forklift operator. The risks are not the same.
And so finally, where can people get more information about the rights of people with disabilities to fair treatment in applying for and getting jobs and keeping those jobs?
Well, our website, the Disability Law Center of Virginia, dlcv.org, has some materials available that can be downloaded, printed out, or just viewed online that answer a lot of those questions. And some of those are particular to Virginia. And also, the EEOC.gov, which is the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission website, has dozens of resources available related to the hiring process, starting a new job, when to request an accommodation, what has to be disclosed. And for people who really want to know specifically about their own situation, there are documents that have examples of what courts have actually held about accommodations being reasonable, about a hardship, about whether it's an essential or non-essential job function. Again, those are very specific to the type of disability and the type of work and the size of the employer and the resources. So it's hard to make general sweeping statements about most things in the law, but particularly in this area. But there are some excellent deep documents available at that website.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Stephen Traubert. He is a senior staff attorney with the Disability Law Center of Virginia, and we have been speaking about employment discrimination as relates to persons with disabilities. Thank you so much for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Turn me around. No, turn me around. Ain't gonna let injustice.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Virginia's Domestic Violence Protective Order statutes cover both family abuse and non-family abuse. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Palma Pistolnik at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society's Charlottesville office explains how to handle your own petition for a protective order if you are not able to get representation by an attorney. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.